Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Samach Gimel Mudbet by the two dots. The Gemara here is referencing back to the Mishnah about Tumat Tehom. In the Mishnah itself, it says Ketzad tries to describe to us different scenarios of Safek Tumah B'Tehom. Yarad Litbo B'Ma'ara V'Nimtza Meit Tzaf Al Pi Ha'Ma'ara Tamei. If he goes down to do his Tevilah, and then there's a mate floating, piece of a mate or something floating in the water itself, then it's tamei, because that's not deemed to be tumat tehom. Nimtza mishuka bakarka hame'ara. On the other hand, if the mate is found buried under the ground, under the floor of the cave, then in that instance, yarad lahaker, if he went down to cool himself off, tahor. Then in that instance, he is tahor, because then at that point, he is tahor. And the assumption is that he will remain tahor because this was tumat tehom. And we saw that the halacha l'Moshe miSinai is, by tumat tehom, it does not affect a nazir or an oseh pesach if you find out after the fact. After everything is done, after it's said and done, if you find that information out, it doesn't impact you. On the other hand, if he's yarad li taher mitumat hamet, if he's going down there to become tahor from tumat hamet, then he remains tamei because chazkat tamei tamei. He has a chazakah of being tamei already, then that will persist if we find tumah there. On the other hand, if he has a chazakah of being tahor, then he will remain tahor. So those are the two qualifications of tumat tehom. Number one is you have to find out about it after everything's done, once you've completed your nizirut, or once you've done the korban ha-pesach. And number two is, at the time that the safek existed, it had to be that you were bechezkat tahara. The assumption is that you were tahor, and that you will remain tahor. If you are already tamei, and then this would maintain or sustain that tumah, then tumah tehom is not a dispensation in that case to allow you to finish the nizirut or the korban ha-pesach. That's the last piece of the Mishnah. Now the Gemara here enters into another world of tumah, where also there's a safek that remains tahor, which is tzafa eino mitamah l'inyan sheretz. When it comes to something that's floating, when it comes to a sheretz, floating tumah is not mitameh. Tanya, we have a braita. It's really an issue that comes up in Masechet Teharot. The Mishnayot and Teharot are talking about different types of tumah that the Rabbanan say are tahor. This is an example of one of those items where they say that the tumah is tahor. It's in a case of safek tumah safa. If you have tumah, that's a safek that is floating. Ben bekelim, ben bekarka. Whether that's inside of a utensil, whether that's in the ground. Tehora. So you have two possibilities of a water body. You can have a water body which is in the ground, and you can have a water body which is inside of kelim, like a above ground swimming pool, or you have a bowl full of water. If you have a sheretz that's floating in either of those locations, floating in the water that's in the ground, or floating in the water that's in a kli, then if you touch it, vadai, you're tamei. There's no question about that. You came into contact with the sheretz, you are tamei. If there's any safek with regards to that tumah, there we say sfeko tahor. Rabbi Shimon argues and says, Omer bekelim tmea bakarka tahora. Depends where the safek arises. If the safek arises in kelim, then you are tamei. If it arises in karka, if the water is in the ground, then you are tahora. Now, in all likelihood, we're talking about a safek tumah b'rshut hayachid. It's in a private domain. And we're going to learn in Masechet Sotah that safek tumah b'rshut hayachid is tameh. So the assumption is here, unless you have this dispensation of safa, then you are going to be tameh in any safek because it's safek tumah b'rshut hayachid. The Chachamim say that this floating dispensation applies both to water that is in the ground as well as water that's in kelim. Rabbi Shimon says that it's only with regards to water in the ground, not with regards to water that is inside of kelim. So my time of the Tanakama. What's the reason behind the Tanakama? Now, here the Gemara is addressing of my time. They're going to bring in quotes from Psukim. The Mishnah in Tarot says that these are six things that the Rabbanon umetaher, which makes it sound like it's a din de Rabbanon and not a din de Oraita. So if we're going to now bring Psukim, you have to argue that these are asmachtot that we're bringing. The other way to deal with it is to say that the Rabbanan were doresh these psukim in such a manner, and that's how they got to the Torah. Not as a din de Rabbanan, it's a din de Oraita. But it's not a din d'oraita that jumps out at you from the psukim. It's something that requires a certain amount of drasha involved with it. And that's what it means, midrabanan. The interpretation of the rabbanan in Torah Shebaal Peh helps us to get to these taharot. So my time at the Tana Kama, the rabbonon who say that if the tumah is floating in the water, whether it's in ground or in a keli, but there's a fake tumah is tahor, that is Amar Yitzchak Bar Avdumi Tiv. It says, b'chol ha-sheretz ha-shoreitz, the pasuk again is b'chol ha-sheretz ha-shoreitz al ha-aretz. The Gemara parses it and says, b'chol ha-sheretz ha-shoreitz, kol makom shehu shoreitz. Makes it sound like anywhere that he is shoreitz, there is tumah. On the other hand, tiv al ha-aretz, it says on the ground. Ha-ketzad. How do we reconcile between seemingly that there is tumah anywhere that the sheretz is found versus al ha-aretz, which makes it sound that only when it's on the ground does it have tumah? Ha-ketzad. Vaday mago'o tamei. Safek mago'o tohor. So the chachamim say that that differential or the difference here has to do with the certainty of the contact with the sheretz. If you are certain that you came into contact with the sheretz, then the din is b'chol sheretz or sheretz. Anywhere it's found, it gives tumah or conveys tumah to that individual. On the other hand, if there's a safek about whether you came into contact with the sheretz, then it's only tamei ala aretz, if you found it on the ground. But you found it ala mayim, then the safek is tahor. That's the drush of the chachamim. Rabbi Shimon, my time up. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon? Amar ula k'tiv. The pasuk says in Parshat Shmini, Ach mayan uvor mikve mayim yetahor, benogeh beniv latam itma. So again, the Gemara parses the pasuk and says, Ach mayan, which makes it sound that when you're in mayan, bor mikve mayim, everything is tahor. And then you have the remainder of the pasuk says, benogeh beniv latam itma. Makes it sound like you are tameh. Ha ketzad. How do you reconcile those two things? If it's like a bor mikvimayim, which are embedded in the ground, then it's tahor. If it's something that's above the ground, then, or in a keli, or any other safek that arises, then it is tameh. So that's the machloka we have here between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Shimon. Now, Tana Banan. Now we have a Tosefta, which says, Kol anitalim v'nigraim nigrarim sfekam tameh. Anything that is being carried or dragged is tamei, b'pnei shehein kemunachim. Because as if they are stationary, they are in a single physical location. What the Tosefta is saying over here is that even though there's an individual carrying around these items, nevertheless, they're considered to be stationary in location. So they will not qualify for this din of tsafa, of floating along. Now Tosefot over here specifies that the case is where there's an individual in the water, and then there's another person, a third party, who's either carrying the sheretz or dragging the sheretz along the mayim, and safek if it came into contact with the other person in the mayim. So Tosfot basically simulates a case of tzafa al-pnei mayim, but the only reason that they're floating along the water is because someone's carrying them or dragging them along the water. So Tosfot basically creates the same exact case that we had before by doing it in the mayim. Other rishonim describe it, not anything to do with water, but simply a general safek. Like the Rosh says, Im natal sheretz biyado, o goruro ba'aretz etzel tarot. He drags it near tarot. Safek naga, safek lo naga. Did it touch it or not touch it? So he clears it of anything to do with the water itself in particular, but talks about a person dragging such tuma around. Is that tuma considered to be tzafa, floating? Or is that considered to be alaretz, that it's stationary tuma? Really, the questions within the Shita of the Chachamim. Shita of the Chachamim would differentiate between a sheretz, a sheretz, and versus al ha'aretz. Here, this individual is carrying the sheretz. So is that considered to be al ha'aretz, or is it not considered to be al ha'aretz? So the Braita tells us, kol nitalim nigraim sfekan tamei, mivnei shein kumunachim. It's as if they are stationary on the ground. Conceptually, that's what they're saying here, is that because the person who is moving the sheretz, so even though the sheretz is in motion, the connection to the person who's carrying the sheretz or dragging the sheretz to the ground makes it ala aretz. And therefore, sfekan tamei, it does not qualify over here for tzafa al pnei amayim. Now, benizrakim, if it is thrown or it's jettisoned, sfekan tahor, then in that sfek, it's a tahor, then it has or takes on the properties of tzafa al pnei amayim. Because now, even though it was through human power that it was moving, but once it's released, it no longer has any contact with the ground. So since it's in motion, it doesn't have a din of ala aretz, and therefore sveko tahor. And the Mefarish goes one step further and says, even according to the one who says that kluta kamisha huncha damyo, that is a concept that we've discussed in other places in Shas, which is that when an object is in motion, how do you view that motion? Do you view that motion as a continuum? Or do you view that motion as discrete points along a line? If you look at it as discrete points along a line, that means that the item basically comes to rest and moves, comes to rest, moves, comes to rest, moves, means that it is at rest at any point that you are in contact with it. On the other hand, if you believe kluta is not kamisha huncha damyo, right, rather it's in motion, then you would believe here that it should be considered in motion and not munachim. That's not true by Tuma. That's what the Mefarish says, that by Tuma, everybody agrees that the item is considered to be in motion, chutz min kezayita meit, v'amahil al pnei Tuma, v'chol davar shemitamei milamalo kilamato, letuye zav v'zava. None of this applies to a kezayita meit. It's not true by kezayita meit. Now, here there's a major machloket rishonim, which will really come to the surface in the next Gemara, and the gears in the next Gemara, as to when the Breita, the Tosefta, says this, what does it mean, chutz mi kezayita meit? By kezayita meit, is there no application of this din of tzafa, which is like the Pashtuta Gemara? The Gemara before said, tzafa inim atamaya le'inyan sheretz. This whole din of in motion is only relevant by a sheretz. So when you're talking about a meit, there's nothing to speak about. Or, is what the Breita is saying is, in the cases of safek tumata ohel, it does not apply to tumata meit. But when you have tumata meit that looks like tumata sheretz, which means you have a safek naga, then maybe it would have a din of tafal pnei amayim. That is not clear from this Tosefta, but it says, chutz mi gzaita meit. So in the case of gzaita meit, v'amayil pnei tuma, so that's whether the gzaita meit moved over the individual, or the individual moved over the gzaita meit, whether the gzaita meit was mahayil on the Adam, or the Adam was mahayil al gzaita meit misafek. In all those cases, the sveko is tamei. And that's not only true of gzaita meit, that's also true of chol davar shmitamei milamala kilamato. Anybody who has tuma that is conveyed upwards and downwards equally. And here the Gemara says, latuye zav zava. That's true of a zav zava. Tosafot reads that in the more simple form. What does that mean? That means that it has tumat midras. That when the zav or the zava sits on an item, then they convey tuma not only to the item that they're sitting on, but anything that's below that item they affect, or tumat heset. If they move an item, they shake an item, even though they don't come into direct contact with it, then they make it tamei. That's how Tosafot learns it. The Mefarish uses the case of Evin Misma, which is something that we've mentioned before, which is a very, very heavy stone, that if a zav or zavah sits on the top of it, and there's something underneath it, even though the item underneath it is not affected by the zav sitting on top, because the stone is so heavy that he doesn't move it, or he doesn't affect it, nevertheless, the item below is tamei, and the same in the reverse. If he's underneath an Evin Misma, there's something on top, he makes them tamei. So that's what the Mefarish says that it's referring to here. Either way, these properties are true by a zav and a zavah, and therefore, when they're in motion, they also have sveikan tamei. There is no such thing as tzafa that is sveiko tahor by the zav and the zavah, and by tumat tameit, that is not applicable. Then, bayi rami bar chama. Rami chama asks, meit bekli, bekli tzaf al pnei amayim. You have meit that is inside of a kli, and then the kli is floating along the water, mahu. What is the din here? Butter kli azlinan, oh, butter, here it says mita, but it really should probably be butter mayo azlinan. Do we go after the water? So the question is a question that was similarly raised in the Gemara in Shabbat, and early in Shabbat, with regards to carrying from Rishut to Rishut. Is it considered hanacha? If an object lands in a kli that's floating in the water, is that hanacha for carrying? I mean, you have to have akiran hanacha to carry on Shabbat. When it lands in that item, is that hanacha? Because it landed in a kli. Or, because the kli is in the water, then the kli is moving, that's not a hanacha, because the kli is not a stationary item, because of the water that it is floating in. So now the question here is strange, because it's by Rami Chama, meit b'kli, is there, basically saying, is there this din of tzafa to tumata meit? Well, we just answered that. The Tosefta just said that when it comes to tumata meit, there is no tzafa al pnei amayim. So it's a very easy answer to his question, just look at the Tosefta. Why would he ask a question or pose a question that's obviously answered by the Tosefta? So there are two ways to deal with it. The way that Tosafot and the Mefresh deal with it is to say here, V'yodeh badai shalo hiel alav. This is a case where he knows for certain he didn't have any tumat ohel, or safek tumat ohel with regards to this item. Aba safeku im naga im lo nagabo. The only safek here is if he touched the tumat tamet or not. And what Tosafot basically says is that the safek now is, but maga dafko dumya de sheretz. Since tumata mate, when you touch it, that's similar to the way that sheretz conveys tuma. So in those cases, do we say that there's a din of tsafa? Because Toso believes that tsafa applies to tumata mate, just like to tumata sheretz, as long as the tuma that you're talking about is tumat maga, which is what happens by sheretz. So Toso says, when the Gemara said before, tsafa ain't a mitamali inyan sheretz, that doesn't mean just by sheretz that the sveko is tahor, but anything that has conveys tuma like a sheretz, which means tumat maga, will also have this safek associated with it. So even though tumat mate does have a din in ohel, the case that we're speaking about here is when he knows for sure there was no ohel here. He wasn't mahil alav, or he wasn't mahil on him. The only question he has, did he come into contact with it? Tosfot says it's the same safek as sheretz, and therefore the question here is sveko tahor or not sveko tahor. Well, that will depend on whether you think the item is floating or not floating in this instance. So that's one way to solve the problem. When the Gemara said before sheretz, it wasn't telling you the level of tuma, it was telling you the method of conveyance of tuma, which is only by maga, or by possibly by masa, but maga masa, where the sheretz has that tuma, and that, by mate, it also has those tuma, it has other tuma besides that. So what Tosafot does is bifurcate the din of mate, and says, if it's about tuma toel, that's what the Tosefta says, you're out of luck, sveko tome. But if it's tumat maga, then it follows the rules of sheretz. And if it's safek by tamei maga, then safal pnei amayim would be safeko tahor. That's the way that Tosafot deals with it. The Gra, on the other hand, if you look in the Gra says, when it says here the word mate, he says, tzarech lamar sheretz. Not mate, but sheretz. The svilei de tzafa ino linyan sheretz bilvad, kipashtuta gemara. The lo karashi v'tosafot. Not like the Mefaresh, not like Tosfot over here. Just read the Gemara simply. Rami Bar Chama's question is, Sheretz Bekli, Bekli Tzafa Bnei Amayim Mahu. Because the din of Tzafa applies to Sheretz. And now the question is very simple. Is this considered to be Tzafa, or is this not considered to be Tzafa, which is the main question of Rami Bar Chama. It's not about the mate, it's about whether the Sheretz is considered to be Tzafa. Now, do you go after the Kli, or do you go after the Mayim? And that's the major question. So the Gra says that the girsa here should be not mate, but rather sheretz. And that solves the problem, because then we're not in conflict with the Tosefta anymore, because we're talking about a sheretz and not a mate. And again, the question is, when you're in the kli, do you look at the item vis-a-vis the kli, and it's stationary, or do you look at it vis-a-vis the totality of what's happening here, which is the kli is floating along the water? And therefore, that's the question that is being posed over here, which is this considered to be tumat safa? So now the Gemara continues and says, and again here, the girsa will depend on what you think. So imtim salomar, butar kli azlinan. So again, for the Rambam, that means we conclude it. Imtim salomar that, butar kli azlinan, that we go after the kli and it's considered to be munach, and not safa, that means it's a fake, magol would be tameh here. Then, mate al gabe sheretz mahu. So the girsa that we have is mate al gabe sheretz, because the safek is whether he came to contact with the mate or not. This continues along the lines of Tosafot and the Mefaresh, that safek magav a mate would be an issue. But if you look in the Gra again, he flips the case and says that it's a case of sheretz al gabe a mate. It's a case where the sheretz is floating on top of the mate, and the safek is whether you came into contact with the sheretz. Again, the question is not about the tumah itself, it's about whether this is considered to be tzafar or not. Kevon, the high tumat erev, high tumat shiv'a. This was your question, David, that you said before. Wait, we're talking about different levels of tumah. So one of them is tumat erev, that's a sheretz, only makes you tameh for the day. Whereas tumat amet makes you tameh for 7 days. Come on, the machta tumah b'kli damyo. Do we look at it as if it's sitting in another object? Odima tumah smichatahi. Or do we consider it to be one unit because they're both tumah? They're both things that convey tuma. So the question here is now I have, let's use the Gra's girsa, a sheretz sitting on top of a mate. So do I say now that the mate is deemed to be a kli for the sheretz? And so therefore the sheretz is sitting on a kli, not in the water, not floating in the water. It's not considered to be floating anymore, and so feko would be tameh. Or do I say that because both the sheretz and the mate are items of tuma, If we look at them as a single unit, then it means that that unit is floating on the water, and it would be tumah, atzafal pnei ha'mayim. If you came into safek contact with that sheretz, you'd be tahor. So again, the Gemara goes, im tim zolomar, keman demachta tumah b'kli damyo. If we conclude here that it is if it's in a kli, so again, for the Rambam, that's a conclusion that we still consider this to be sfeiko tamei, because it's like it's in a kli, and we said before, kli is like it's stationary. So if you say, keman demachta tumah b'kli damyo vitamei, the word vadai or tamei here doesn't make so much sense, because of course, the sfeiko tamei, if you can deem it to be in the kli. So then, sheretz agabi nevela. What happens if the sheretz is floating on top of a nevela? Benevela safa, and the nevela is floating in the water, mahu. What's the din here? Now you're talking about two items that have the same level of tumah, which is that they're only mitameh for one day. So then, tumah smichatahi, then it's considered to be one unit, and therefore the sheretz is deemed to be floating along the water. Their shiurim, to be mitameh, are different. By nevela, the shiur to be mitameh is kezayit. The shiur by a sheretz is ki adasha, is like a lentil seed. So maybe because their shiurim are different, they're deemed to be different items, as if it's floating on top of something. So now the Gemara says, v'sheretz agabi sheretz mahu. Even if you don't answer that question, what about the fact that you have a sheretz floating on top of another sheretz? Hani vadai chajiru ninhu. They, for sure, there you can't differentiate. They're all one type of tumah. They have the same shiur, the same duration of tumah. Odilma came into mifsake mahadodi long. Or maybe because they're separate items, then they're considered to be entities unto themselves, and then the top one is sitting in the equivalent of a kli that is floating on the water, and then it would be safek tumah is tamei. Or do we consider them to be one unit, and they're floating on the water, and it's tumah tsafa, and therefore you would be safek tumah tahor. Vim tim salomar. So now again here, a conclusion that sheretz agabi sheretz, that when you have a sheretz and tamei sheretz, came into mifsake mahadodi, they're separate units, command the mantcho b'kli dami. They have a din like they're placed in a kli. So again here, conclusive that we think that it's sheretz agabi sheretz considered to be separate units. That means that it's kemunach b'kli. That means it's not deemed to be tzafa ala ma'im. That means safek tumah tamei. Then sheretz agabe nevela shinimocha mahu. If there's a sheretz floating on top of a nevela that had spoiled to the point where it had now liquefied. So you have nevela that's liquefied, that's sitting in the water, and a sheretz floating on top of it. Why is there a question here? Because came into the mocha havila mashke, since it already liquefied, it's already din like a mashke. Or maybe it's still considered to be a solid item. So here you could pose the question of one of two ways. You could either pose the question is that all of this is happening on the water, and therefore the question is, is the nevela deemed to be like a kli? Because if it is a solid item, it'd be like a kli. If it was a liquid, then it would be deemed to be part of the water, and then it would be like you're floating in the water. Or, this question can be asked independent of floating on the water. Meaning that if you have a sheretz that is on top of this liquid, what's the din? Is the din that it's sitting on a nevela, but it's a solid nevela, and therefore there's no din of tzafal pnei ha'mayim? Or do we consider the nevela that is already liquefied at that point, that it's a liquid, and now it's considered to be tzafa al pnei ha'mayim? So you could ask the question independent of them floating on the water, meaning that is this deemed to be a liquid or not? Or you can ask it even in the water, which is, if it's deemed to be a liquid or a solid, we'll make it like the cases that we've been discussing until now. Is there an object that's sitting between the sheretz and the water that it's floating in? V'imtim salomar du'uchlu. Now again, for the Rambam, this is a conclusion that we consider to be an uchla. That means that if it's in the water, it's like it's in a kli, and therefore it's not tzafal pnei ha'mayim. Or if it's outside the water, this is in a liquid, so you're not tzafal pnei ha'mayim. Sheretz agabe shechvat zera mahu. What's the din of a sheretz on top of shechvat zera? What's unique about shechvat zera here? So there are two ways to express what the issue with shechvat zera is that's different than normal liquid. Which is either because shechvat zera is not like a regular liquid, it's more viscous than a normal liquid, and therefore that's the question here. Or is the question that it is produced in the body, but it's not a liquid in the body, as opposed to like urine or saliva, which is a liquid that is stored in the body. And then when the body expels the liquid, it was stored as a liquid and is expelled as liquid. Over here, it's really stored as a, let's call it quote-unquote a solid, and then it produces a liquid when it's expelled by the body. So maybe that's not deemed to be a liquid. So one of those two makes it a question about specific shechvat zera as opposed to any other liquid. So now again, the question is, if the sheretz on top of this, now again, the same way that we said before, it could be one of two ways you can express the question. The shechvat zera is on the water, and then the tumah is on top of the shechvat zera. Is the shechvat zera considered to be a kli underneath the item, and therefore it's not safal pnei amayim? Or is it a liquid and it's batel to the water, and then it's safal pnei amayim? Or, even if you're not in water, the sheretz that's sitting on top of the shechvat zera, is that considered to be on top of a solid? Or is that considered to be tafal pnei amayim? Mahu. Gemara here has no answer to this, but it has, again, v'im tim salomar, kevan demit akro, havalei ku'uchla, since it is something that is taken out, or comes from a solid, then it's ki'uchla. Again, here there's some questions as to the gears of mit akro, which is the way that we have it. Shenit akra means mibsarol shel adam, since it comes expelled by the individual themselves, and it's not like other liquids, therefore it has a din of uchla. That's one way to read it. Or the other way to read it is that the mit akra here is more along the line of the viscosity of the shechvat zera, since it doesn't disperse easily, therefore it's a deemed to be an uchla. Then, sheretz agabi mechatat. What happens if your sheretz floating on mechatat? Now mechatat is comprised of water together with ashes in the water. So it, in terms of water, it's real water, but it has other items in it that give it a certain solidity to it, which is these ashes. Now Tolosfot points out, Omeri duad din de matzah minkat efer umayim. The question could have been asked about any type of mixture that involves water and a solid together that becomes a more liquidy substance. Ichoshi mashkeelo. That's the question that you're asking here. Ela l'rabuta nakat. The chiddush is that it asked about meichatat. Da'akavav di'ika l'meimar came into high tumah. V'hai tumah havilei ki tumah smichato. Over here, there's another reason to deem it to be a single item, which is the fact that it also, they're both involved in tumah, because mechatat is mitameh, anybody who comes into contact with it, and the sheretz is mitameh. So here there's an additional facet to mechatat that doesn't exist in other mixtures that would have the same properties, and you would have the same question. So over there, what's the din? Mechatat safin al gabi amayim, and here, again, the mechatat al safin al pnei amayim, here you can ask the question, the gro eliminates this from the question, because, as we said before, you could pose the question in one of two ways in all these instances. Is this item on top of, like, the shechvat zera in the water? Or is it just simply on top of the shechvat zera? And the question is the shechvat zera mayim? Is it considered to be tzafa? So you can ask this question without it floating in the water itself. So ma'o, what's the din? Lo yadinan. In this case, we do not know. And teiku, we leave it as an unresolved issue. For again, for the Rambam, that means that all the imtim salomars until now answered questions. And it's only this final stage where we have a teiku. For other Rishonim, you could argue that the teiku applies to numerous cases up the line here because the Gemara didn't necessarily have a conclusion. The Gemara was just testing. If we say this, let me extend the question to another matter. All right, so now we move on to another issue, which is our Mishnah in the end talks about Tumat Tahom being something that has an exemption or exception by Nazir and Korban HaPesach. If you find out after the fact, then you do not have to do them again. So here the case was that these individuals had become Tameh. So you had a Nazir who became Tameh, or you have someone who was going to bring a Korban Pesach who became Tameh. They went through the process of Tara. The process of Tara is 7 days. On the third day, you sprinkle on the individual, the Mechatat. On the seventh day, you sprinkle on the Mechatat on them. And then they go to the Mikveh. And then the sun sets on the seventh day and they are tehorim. So that's for the Korban HaPesach. For the Nazir, you have an additional item, which is that after he goes to the mikveh on the seventh day, he has to cut his hair. He has to cut all of his hair off. And then on the eighth day, he'll have to bring Korbanot in order to finish off his Tiglachata Tumah. So what happened here is that they went through the Tara process. They went to the mikveh on the seventh day. And now waiting for the sun to set, they, for whatever reason, they went somewhere. They come home, they finish up their Nizirut, they thought they were Tahor now, finish up the Nizirut, they bear it to Korban HaPesach. Weeks later, they find out that on that seventh day, after the time they went to the mikveh, they came into contact with Tumat Tahom. Or that they were Mahayil on Tumat Tahom. What is the din here? Rav Amnuna says they are Tahorim. My Taima. Delo Alima Tumat Tahom, the Mistar. Tumat Tahom is not strong enough here to undermine. So they're going to ask from our Mishnah right away, which is, our Mishnah says that if you have a cheskat tumah, then you remain tamei. If you have a cheskat tara, then you remain tahor when it regards to tumat tahom. Over here, these individuals were tamei tumat amet, and they had not finished their process of tahara. So they should be someone who's becheskat tumah. If they have a cheskat of tumah, then tumat tahom should sustain that tumah, and there should be a problem over here. Why do we not say that? So that's what Gemara says. Meitiv Rava, challenger of Amnuna from our Mishnah. Yeradi teher mitumata meit tamei. So then he remains tamei. Shechezkat tamei tamei. If you are tamei, you will remain tamei. Shechezkat tahor tahor. If you're tahor, you remain tahor. So over here, where they're on their seventh day of becoming tahor from tumata meit, that should be that they are still tamei. They have not finished the process yet. So Amalei Modina Locha Binazir. Rav Amnuna says to Rava, I agree with you that in the case of Nazir, that is true. And that is because Nazir, even after he goes to the mikveh, he still has to do tiglachat atumai. He still has to cut his hair. But if it was after he went to the mikveh, and after he cut his hair, eno chanami, that I would believe he's tahor. Right, but the korban is not me'akev. He's already out of the chezkat of tumah. He's tahor. He just has to bring his korbanot. That doesn't affect his tumah. We're talking about a chazaka of tumah here. So what Rav Amnuna says over here is the Mishnah is talking about a case where he did not done his tiglachat yet. How does he know that? Because the Mishnah talks about a case, Yerad L'tbol. He went to the gown to go to the mikveh. In becoming tahor from tumat amet, again, you sprinkled on the third day and the seventh day, you go to the mikveh, and then you wait for the sun to set. For a Nazir, you go to the mikveh, then you cut your hair and wait for the sun to set. So if the Mishnah is telling you you're going down to the mikveh, that's prior to the mikveh, but it's also prior to tiglachat tumah. So he says, in that case, I agree. That's why the Mishnah says that he remains tamei, because he's becheskat tumah. He didn't finish up all that he needed to do. He didn't do his tiglachat. He didn't do his mikveh yet. So that's why he's in a position where he has a cheskat tumah. My statement was in a case where, after he went to the mikveh, after he got his hair cut, then if it happened on the seventh day, he is tahor for tumat tahom. The question you have to ask is, why is that true? Because what about Erev Shemesh? The sun didn't set. He's not completely tahor until the sun sets on that day. So that we'll leave aside now, because the Rava says, Amalei Rava, afanam mandina lechabo se pesach, delo mechusar velo klum. Rava says back to you, I agree with you, Rav Amnuna, in the case of Korban HaPesach, that it's not a problem. Why? Because Korban HaPesach doesn't have any other requirement. Once you've gotten to the mikveh, then you don't have to cut your hair. All you have to do is wait for the sun to set. So Amar Le Abaye, Vaha Mechutzar Erev Shemesh. So this question now applies to both of the cases. It is, you still need to wait for the sun to set. That's what we call a Tvol Yom. Tvol Yom is someone who's gone to the mikveh and is waiting for the sun to set. They're not completely tahor until the sun sets. Well, if that's the case, they have a Chezkat Tumah. They have a Chezkat Tumah, then Tumah Tahom should affect them. They should not be okay with the tumat tahom. So the answer is, Amalei, Shimsha Memela Arva. So over here, it's a question if it's Amalei or Amalei Rova, that Shimsha Memela Arva. The sun sets by itself. Meaning that the sun setting on that day, or the completion of the Tara process, involves no other action that you need to take. You simply sit back, and you will become tahor. Since you're in that position where you have to do absolutely nothing more to become tahor, and you're in a passive state to become tahor, we deem you as if you are tahor in that case. Not because you are tahor, but because it will happen automatically. And since it will happen automatically, that's as if you're tahor, or the other way to phrase it is that the level of tumah left on you now is so low that we don't consider to have a chazakat tumah. Because all that has to happen is the sun sets and now you're tahor. That residual tumah is not a high enough level where you have a cheskat tumah. So one of those two ways to express it, but since it will happen in this manner, it's considered to be done already. Zvaf Abaye Hadarbe. And even Abaye now rescinded his question. His question here is, what about Erev Shemesh? And the answer he gets is Erev Shemesh happens automatically, but it seems that Abaye thinks that that's a problem. What Gemara is going to show here is that Abaye gives the same answer to another problem. And so clearly he then agrees with this answer that was given to him that when it happens automatically, you're okay. By Korban HaPesach, the statute of limitations is Pesach Sheni. If it's after Pesach Sheni, it's not relevant anymore because you can't do anything to rectify the situation. But Nazir, he might have to do his Nazirut over again. Titania, we have a Braita. Yom Milot Tavi Toch Milot Lo Tavi. So this is dealing with a woman who either gave birth or miscarried. Woman who gives birth or miscarries, if it's a Zachar, she is tamei for 7 days, And then she has 33 days where she is what's called a Tvulat Arom Yom Aroch, which is that on the 7th day she goes to the mikveh, and then she has to wait for the sun to set on the 40th day, and then she becomes Tehora, but during that interim period she is considered to be Tehora. She may not enter the Mikdash, she may not eat Kodoshim, but she is Tehora to her husband, and she's Tehora for other items. Once the sun sets on the 40th day, then she's completely Tehora, and she brings her korbanot, the korban leida, on the 41st day. The same is true by Nekeva. It was a Nekeva that she gave birth to or she miscarried. Then she's for 2 weeks, she is Tmeah. She goes to the mikveh, and then for 66 days, she is a Tfulat Yom Aruch. And in that Tfulat Yom Aruch, she can't eat Kodashim, she can't come into the Mikdash, but she is Tehora, the Bala. And then when the sun sets on the 80th day, she becomes completely Tehora. And on the 81st day, she brings her korbanot for the korban leida. Now, what happens if in the interim period she miscarries again? So obviously by the case of a zechar, it's not relevant, because the minimum duration for a fetus to be deemed a miscarriage that gives tumah, you need 40 days. So if the whole tumah of a zechar is 40 days, there's just no way she has enough time to become pregnant again and then miscarry with a fetus that is 40 days in duration. So that's clearly not the case. It has to be a case of nekeva, but she has 80 days. So during that period of time, she became pregnant again. And then she miscarries within the 80-day period. So that's what the Braita here says, that toch melot lotavi. If she miscarries during that 80-day period, she only has to bring one korban to discharge the obligation for both of the miscarriages. Since the miscarriage happened in the middle of her time period from the first birth or miscarriage, because of that, one korban will suffice for both of them. Right? She has to wait until completing the tumah tahara process of the second miscarriage, but only one korban will be brought for both of them. But if it's yom melot, if it happens on the final day, then tavi, she has to bring a second korban. The question, it's really a machloket beit hillel and beit shammai, but the Mishnayot discuss a case where it's on that she finished the 80th day, and it's the night before the 81st day. So she has yet to bring her korban. If it happened on the 81st day after she brought her korbanot, or she should have brought her korbanot, then automatically we say that she has to bring another korban for this miscarriage. But if it happens on the night before, on the night basically after the 80th day, before the 81st day, right after the Erev Shemesh, then what's the din with regards to this woman? There's Machlokes Beit Hillel ben Shammai, because she's already past the point where the process of Tahara has happened, but she's mechusar the ability to bring a korban, because you can't bring korbanot at night. So that night, there's a question, Machlokes Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, as to whether then does that deem to be a new miscarriage, or is it part of the first miscarriage? But here, the Braita says that Yom Melot, if it happens on Yom Melot, Tavi, she has to bring a second korban in that case, because that's deemed to be a new miscarriage, and she's finished the first miscarriage, and now she's on to the new miscarriage, and therefore each one will require a separate korban. If it happens during the period of 80 days of the first miscarriage, then one korban will suffice for both miscarriages. It's not saying that it's the same miscarriage, it's simply saying that the tumah now never ended. Since you never ended the tumah from the first miscarriage, it basically extends the period of time that you are tumah, but does not require you to bring an additional korban. On the other hand, if you've already exited the time period for the first miscarriage and the second one happens, even though it happens before you bring your korbanot, then you have to bring a second korban for the new miscarriage because it's deemed to be a new tumah and a new miscarriage completely. She essentially reached the point of tahara, even though she didn't bring her korbanot, but that's enough to say that it's a new event. If it's a new event, it's a new obligation that requires you to bring a separate korban. So that's the opening statement of the Braita, the Tosefta. Then, Yochol lo tavi aleida shlifnei milot, aval tavi aleida shlaachar milot. Tipater mishtehem. And she'll be exempted from both of them. The lashon of tipater mishtehem is very difficult here, but the scenario is such that she has three miscarriages. The first miscarriage happens, and now she's counting her 80 days. Then, she miscarries within that 80-day period. And so now she starts a new or second 80-day period. She finishes the first 80-day period, but the second 80-day period is still going. During that latter half of the second 80-day period, she has a third miscarriage. So there's no overlap between the first and third miscarriage. The thing that connects them is that the second miscarriage is during the first 80 days, and it also, the third one happened while the second one was still in the 80-day period. So the second miscarriage connects between the first and the third. So you would think now that in that case, that the first and second miscarriages could be captured by one korban. But that would not be able to capture the third miscarriage, because the third miscarriage is achar malot. It was after she completed the 80 days of her first miscarriage. Even though she's not tohora, because she still has to count the second days, but maybe you would think there that you can only cover the first two, and that's what it means, tipeter mishtehem, that you exempt the first two, but not the third. Talmud Lomar, ubu malot yimei tahara, biyom tolot tavi, toch malot lo tavi. So they bring the pasuk to tell you that only biyom malot, only if you completed your tahara, do you bring a separate korban. But if it's within the malot, then you don't bring a second korban. Which means that even though the third miscarriage happened after the first miscarriage or the 80 days had completed, nevertheless, since it's toch malot of the second one, that is still deemed to be toch malot. Because yom malot is only when you can exit from the tumah and bring a korban. Even though when you finish the first 80 days, you finish that miscarriage, but that didn't allow you to exit because the second one extended the duration of your tumah. And therefore, there's no yom malot until after the second one's completed. And therefore, if you had the third miscarriage then, it's considered to be that they're all one long unit. And therefore, you don't have a separate obligation for korban in each one of them. You can bring one korban and discharge all three miscarriages in this case. So now, what's the issue over here? So where it says, Amar Rav Kahana, shani ocha, the michsara korban. The reason is because she can't bring her korban. Over here, the reason that he thinks that you can extend it is because even at the completion of the first miscarriage, she can't bring her korban. The fact that she can't bring her korban shows you she hasn't reached the yom melot. And since she hasn't reached the time of yom melot, that means that her first miscarriage, in a sense, has been extended and now goes longer than you thought because she doesn't have the ability to bring a korban. And since she can't bring her korban, it's as if she's still within that first miscarriage, even though it's being extended by the second miscarriage. And therefore, when the third miscarriage happens, it's as if it's in the same period as the first miscarriage, and you can bring one korban for all of them. So the Gemara retorts now and says, wait a minute. Hatanami michsra herev shemesh. In the normal case of a miscarriage, then also you have a problem of herev shemesh. This question is not so simple. I'll explain in a minute why it's not so simple. But let's just, at face value, let's take the question this way. Even when she's on her 81st day, she still has to wait for the sun to set. So therefore, if she has a miscarriage on that day, we should say that it's considered to be part of the first miscarriage and she'd only have to bring one korban. How can we say that when it happens on that day, it's considered to be a new event and she has to now obligate it in a separate korban for that? Because there's still something missing from her tahara. The answer Abaye gives is, Amalei Abaye Shimsha Memela Arva. The sun happens by itself, the sun sets by itself, and therefore it's not an issue. Now, Tosafot already raises the issue, but this is a very difficult scenario. Because, let's look at a normal case of a Leida. What ends up happening is that after the 2 weeks of Tumah, she goes to the mikveh. And then, on the 80th day, that's when the sun sets, that makes her Tehora. So now, when she's going to bring her Korbanot on the 81st day, there's no longer any Herev Shemesh left. What's the Gemara talking about here in Erev Shemesh? Erev Shemesh already happened on the end of day 80, and that was where the ended her Tzvulat Yom Aroch, and she was done. So what Erev Shemesh are they discussing here that when it happens on the 81st day, the Yom Malot, that they're talking about Erev Shemesh? So Tosafot comes up with two solutions. They're both difficult, but he's dealing with the difficulty of a Gemara speaking in a case which seemingly doesn't really even exist. So he says, Milo Askinan, she didn't go to the mikveh after 2 weeks. Basically, she said, why should I bother going to the mikveh? I'll wait till after the 80 days are over, because that's when it'll matter. Now, the truth is, it does affect her. She won't be able to be together with her husband. But not maybe, she probably doesn't want to be together with her husband at that point in time anyway. But she doesn't go to the mikveh, for whatever reason, she doesn't go to the mikveh in the 2 weeks. So even then, she's not ru'uya to bring her korban because she didn't go to the mikveh yet. So now, when she goes on to the 81st day, even though she can bring her korbanot, she's technically in abeyance until she goes to the mikveh and gets herev shemesh. So that's one way that Tosafot asks the question, or says that's the question. Klomar. Lo mi bai chisaron atvila shenu chashuv chisaron. He says going to the mikvah is definitely not a chisaron. Why? Sharei mikveh lefanav ubi adolit po. Person can go to the mikvah anytime they want. So we won't consider that to be something that stops you from becoming tahor because you have the ability to exercise that right. Since you could go to the mikveh, and that's already considered to be the end of your first miscarriage. Because you could have gone to the mikveh anytime you so chose and end the problem of tumah. Right, but that's not, so what we're seeing here according to Tosfot is it's not all about the action by you or something that happens memela, but the Harav Shemesh is more problematic than going to the mikveh. Because Harav Shemesh is out of your control and you have to wait for it. And so that's where we have a havamina that you're not tahor until it happens because you have to wait for a milestone and you don't have any control over that. You need that milestone. The other hand, going to the mikveh, you can do anytime you want. The same way that on the 81st day, if you had you gone to the mikveh and had Harav Shemesh, on the 81st day, you didn't bring your korbanot yet, and then she has another miscarriage, it's still deemed to be a new event. Because even though she didn't bring the korbanot, she had the ability to bring the korbanot, that's sufficient ground. So do over here. By the mikveh, since she has the ability to go to the mikveh, that's not going to be ma'akev. But the Harav Shemesh, she'enu biyadol lo kochashiv chisaron shimshem emela arva. The reason that the sun setting is also not considered to be a chisaron, even though it's out of your control, is because it'll happen passively. It'll happen automatically. And therefore, it's deemed to be as if you've reached that point of tahara, and you're into a new event. So that's one way that Tosfot explains the scenario here, is that she waited to go to the mikveh. And since she waited to go to the mikveh, that's why she's faced with this Harav Shemesh problem in a point in time where she should already be done with this. But nevertheless, we don't see that as an equal. And if she has a miscarriage, then it's a new event. And it's as if she passed through the point of Tahara. Because all that she's missing now is mikveh and Harav Shemesh. Mikveh she can do when she pleases. And Harav Shemesh will happen automatically. So it's as if she is deemed to be in a new event. And if she has a miscarriage, then from it. V'itim efarshe, Tosfot gives an alternate explanation. Hai de michsera Harav Shemesh mitvila de Rabbanan. The Rabbanan instituted, this is by any case where you have a, what's called mechusrei kapara. We have to bring korbanot on the day after you become tahor. The Chachamim established that you have to go to the mikveh again. You go to the mikveh again because this person has been separated from kodeshim for a long time. And we want them to take in consideration, maybe they're tameh from something else. They weren't worried about tumah for a long duration because they were tameh. And therefore they didn't worry about it. So we ask them to go to the mikveh on that morning just to put their mind back into the concept of tumah and tahara and to focus properly. So there's a din of tevila midarabanan. So Tosfot says that some people explain that what we're talking about here, this tevila, is that tevila that's on the 81st day. And that's what they're talking about. The problem of that is, v'no nehira. He says that doesn't make so much sense. First of all, chado, doraita amina. It seems like here we're discussing a case doraita, not derabanan. And that's only a tevila midarabanan. But the more important criticism of that is, you don't need Harav Shemesh. That tevila is a tevila midarabanan, and you're tohora right away. At that point, as soon as you go to the mikveh, after you brought your korbanot, then you're done. You don't have to wait for Harav Shemesh on the 81st day. So there's no din of Harav Shemesh to ask the question on Abaye. So that's why Tosafot says that the first explanation must be the right explanation, that we're talking about a case here where she didn't go to the mikveh, and therefore this whole situation or scenario of Harav Shemesh came up. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Samach Daled Amud Bet.